You're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, episode 65.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you, I'm excited that the Get Balanced podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast and our special episode this week. Of course, it's with LifeScan Wellness Learning Lab and Chief Strategy Officer Todd LaDuke. We are co-hosting. And our special guest this week is Deputy Chief of Operations from Ian Emmons from a Dayton, Ohio surrounding fire department. Welcome to the show, Ian. And Todd, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donnie. I appreciate it. Always, we're having fun with this series. I'm thrilled to have Chief Emmons on, who's not only a colleague but a friend. And we're going to talk about a number of items today and focus on some of the work that he's been doing with the IFC and on cardiac, trying to reduce cardiac deaths. But Ian, before we get started, why don't you, for those in our audience that may not be familiar with you and your background, why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the service and how that's evolved?
Yeah, thanks, Todd, and thanks, Donnie. So as Donnie had mentioned, I'm the Deputy Chief of Operations for a large suburban fire department outside of Dayton, Ohio. Been here for about 6 years. And prior to that, I've pretty much stayed in Southwest Ohio the majority of my career, which is about 15 years now. And just started out as a firefighter paramedic and kind of focused on the siloed thought of fire and EMS only. As I have been fortunate enough to promote through the ranks from lieutenant to battalion chief, now to deputy chief, I've really had my eyes open to a lot of different facets of the fire service and realizing that while a big part of what we do is, you know, responding to fire and EMS, you know, there's a whole background that's underway at any given time in the admin side, which really hammers home the health and safety and the wellness of our members. You know, the old adage that the most valuable resource to any organization is its members. And in order for our members to go out and respond to health or respond to EMS calls and fire calls, you know, really dove into the health and wellness side.
That's great, great overview. And, you know, I guess, you know, I think maybe you missed a small piece, which is you've got a new addition, I think, too. Is that I heard. I don't know if that's true or not.
That is, I have an 8 week old son now. So a 4.5-year-old daughter and an 8 week old son, and things are very lively in my household. So it's, everybody's doing well. Not a whole lot of sleep going around. Actually, that's a little bit of a lie. Fortunately, for the past four nights, we've gotten about 7 hours each night a stretch. So that's something new. That's up from about 90 minutes to 7 hours. So I feel like I could run an ultra marathon at this point. I'm very well rested.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the new addition and healthy. And it's great for
Thank you
and your wife. Congrats.
Todd, let me jump in there with Ian on this one. Is that, hey, for the listeners out there that do not have children, talk just a little bit. What's the difference between, it was only 4.5 years ago before your first one arrived, right? You remember what it was like pre-children. From a work-life balance standpoint, does it get a little bit more challenging?
It does. It does. You know, your priorities change. And I've had conversations with both of you and the background, you know, just outside of anything like this. And it's your priorities and just trying to make sure that you're there for the people, the right people at the right time in your life. You know, and I love what I do for a living, but at the end of the day, my family is going to be in my life for the rest of my life. Whereas, you know, the fire into the fabric of who I am, but there's going to come a time, you know, many years down the road where I'm going to retire. So, you know, that's the thing that gets flipped on its head is as a young firefighter, paramedic, and then a young lieutenant, a young battalion chief, it was all things fire service because that's really, we vacationed. It was just my wife and I, and then I worked, and that was all it was. And then whenever you bring life into this world and you're blessed with that opportunity, those priorities definitely change. And it's not that work is any less important. It's just, you know, a restructuring of how your time, and it's a dynamic thing. It's an ongoing thing. And every day that he grows older and every day that my daughter grows older, that balance, that structure has to change just a little bit to make sure that I'm still giving them everything that they need at the time that they need it, while also being able to fulfill my obligations at work.
That is awesome. And when you talk about, you know, the priorities and things like that, and one of those priorities you mentioned is that you're going to be with your family for a very, very long time. And I know that's what Todd is all about, is helping firefighters get to retirement, get and have a long time in retirement. You know, it's about that longevity, right?
Yep.
That's great, great points, guys. You know, we all sometimes are challenged, particularly in our profession, of balancing, as you said, Ian, you know, right place and right time and priorities. And sometimes we don't always get to choose those, but it's always a work to balance it as best as we can. And while we're speaking of families, again, another maybe point, folks, that I wanted to say congratulations to Donnie. If I heard another rumor. You know, there's no secrets in the fire service, they said. that your daughter had received an Army ROT scholarship. So you're heading down the path of having another member of the family serving our country.
Yes. Couldn't be more proud. The girl has worked her tail off from kindergarten. Actually, before kindergarten. I was doing algebra with Gabriella when she was 4 years old. And she just loved to learn, and it's been, you know, like the other kids, been great students, and worked her tail off and got a 4-year ROTC, Army ROTC scholarship. And she's heading down to Vanderbilt University. She's super excited about that. And I'll tell you, for those that are in Nashville, gosh, I had no idea how fun and what a neat city and lively city Nashville is. Okay. I was just down there a couple of weeks ago, and wow, there's a lot to do. So she could not have picked a nicer place for me to go visit.
Well, that's great. Congratulations again.
And thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you. And your family that served. I know you have a son that served as well. Yes. So thanks for all you do. Ian, let's jump in right into it. You know, I think one of the things we wanted to touch on today was you and I have been blessed to serve and be elected board members for the International Association of Fire Chiefs. in particular, their Safety, Health, and Survival Section Board. And we've had some chance, and you really were the point for a really great initiative that was started by past president, Chief Gary Ludwig, who's a dear friend I've known for several decades. But Gary came into his presidency, and he's been a longtime member of the Safety, Health, and Survival Section. And he had this concept that he wanted to advance during his term, which was, you know, we tragically continue to see that on duty, line of duty deaths are being continually led by sudden cardiac events that take members all too soon, tragically. And I know my dear friend Denise Smith reminds us that that's just the deaths. We don't really talk about the disabling events. So you have a cardiac event and Lord willing, you survive, but you've got a tremendous amount of heart damage and you can't be a firefighter. So Gary came into his presidency with this initiative that he wanted to kick off, and he called it the, if you don't feel well, don't make it your final farewell, I think it was, or something along that, and put a group together. And you really were the tip of the spear in this. So I want, if you can talk a little bit about the initiative and where it, you know, how it has started, how it evolved. And, you know, I know it was at the same time as we got hit with the pandemic. But, you know, I want to get your insights on how it started, where it is today, where you see it going into the future. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I was definitely blessed to be a part of that project. And, you know, it kind of fell into my lap. It was actually one of our other SHS board members was detailed to that or that group to work on that committee. And through some work-life balance things of his own, he was having a child also. And he was unfortunately unable to attend one of the meetings down in Washington, D.C., down in IFC headquarters. And he asked if I was able to step in, and I didn't have anything going on at that time. So I was able to attend that for him. So I was really, you know, fortunate to be able to help both him out and the section out and be a part of that project. So really it happened pretty organically in that way. And, you know, it was a big room of a lot of smart people in IFC headquarters there to specifically discuss Chief Ludwig's initiative. And he was, you know, the leadership that he provided, the oversight throughout that entire project was absolutely incredible. And it really was from a place of love on his part, both experience, because he had experienced a cardiac event while he was on duty. And he's also unfortunately had multiple cardiac events occur within the organizations that he served. So this was something that was really near and dear to his heart. And as he was laying out, you know, the pillars of what he was trying to do, I think everybody in the room could certainly feel that. And that kind of energized everybody that to that degree. And, you know, as we were just kind of brainstorming and bouncing ideas off of how to bite this one off and really try to institutionalize it within the fire service. You know, we were talking about personal experiences and I didn't have a cardiac event, but a partner of mine while on duty had a cardiac event when I was a very young firefighter paramedic. And that left a lasting impression on me because I didn't act. I didn't take him to the hospital. I didn't, you know, really lean on him. That individual ended up going home from work that day feeling poorly. And by the grace of God, you know, his wife ended up coming home and seeing that he was in a bad shape. And he ended up having to have stents placed that day. She made him go to the hospital. She was in that formal authority position to make him go to the hospital. But that left a lasting impression on me because as I became more aware and a little bit more mature, I realized that my inaction as a partner could have cost him his life. And, you know, as I've developed as a firefighter and into a fire officer and on the administrative side of a fire department now, it's really been important to me to make sure that we take care of our members And, you know, a big part of that is cardiac health. And there's a lot that goes into that. That's not just one individual thing. But as we dove into the, if you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell initiative, it was really emphasizing the point of on-duty cardiac related events. And almost that, you know, the saying, if you see something, say something. If somebody within your organization is feeling poorly, or if you are feeling poorly, we want to identify that moment in time and we want to act. And that was really the drive there, was how do we build an initiative around making people aware and actually giving them the preparation and the ability to act, because not all, you know, fire departments across the United States are fire-based EMS. So it's not just as simple as saying, you know, we're really fortunate in my area that everybody's a paramedic for the most part. You know, so it's simple for us to say, okay, everybody's going to know and be able to identify what a cardiac event looks like. But unfortunately, you know, throughout the entire United States, that's not the case. So it was really trying to make sure that the initiative was able to touch everybody across the U.S. And as we worked through that 2 or 3 days at headquarters, I was fortunate enough to be placed on the task group for the toolkit. And there were a lot of talented people that really provided a lot of great input and oversight on that as well. And we were able to spin out a pretty comprehensive toolkit, which included some policies and procedures for how to handle on duty events, because really there's a lot of red tape to go through. You know, does your insurance cover it? Are you in a presumptive state where BWC is going to cover it? You know, how does that go? So it's just kind of some guidance for administrators within fire departments to outline their policies and procedures. So it gives your members the playbook up front to where they know that, you know, in the unfortunate event that they have an on-duty event, that they're able to handle it, and they know what's going to happen. They know what's going to happen next. They know if they're going to be put on paid administrative leave. They know. So really, it's just a preemption device to some degree, much like most policies and procedures are. It includes a lot of information, educational information on how to identify cardiac events. So again, going back to that non-fire-based EMS organizations. So there are members who may not even be first responders on the EMS side. So they're aware of what to be looking for, you know, in a member, if they go fight a fire, if they go out on a car wreck and they come back and they're having cardiac issues, if they're pale, if they're sweaty, they're diaphoretic, they're having a hard time breathing, something of that nature, that they're able to identify, okay, maybe this is a cardiac event. And then there's just a lot of other articles and whatnot that have been written specific to firefighter death. Just trying to create awareness, because this is an epidemic in and of itself within the fire service. It touches all of us. And we have, as you well know, you know, both on the fire service side and with LifeScan, there's a lot that can be done on the front end. There's a lot that can be done on the back end. It's not just a one size fits all. There's a lot of comprehension to, you know, combating this cardiac issue. And, you know, the If You Don't Feel Well campaign, just it did a really great job in the past of identifying that one single point in time. And as we move forward, you know, you and I and Chief Ludwig are really still trying to hammer this out. And, you know, as you mentioned, the pandemic kind of took center stage. So unfortunately for Chief Ludwig's initiative, it had to go on the back burner just based on priorities and what we had going on. But I think we're getting to a point now where it needs to come back to the forefront, because much like Dr. Clark's seatbelt initiative many years ago, you know, it's something that we are going to have to institutionalize across the U.S. fire service, across the fire service in the entire world, for that matter, if we're wanting to make an impact on this, because it takes too many of our sisters and brothers from us on a yearly basis.
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on so many great points, Ian. You know, I still remember, even though I don't want to date myself, you know, paramedic training, being taught that one of the most preeminent signs, if you will, of a heart attack is denial. You know, certainly in a culture that sometimes we have in the fire service, that can even be more challenging to admit that we're having an event. But you touched on a ton of resources that you in the task force put together. How for our listeners that are out there and our audience, how would they access those resources and that toolkit that you mentioned?
Yeah. So if you go to the IOC.org website and you can do a simple search for cardiac toolkit, and that's the most, you know, that's the most direct way to get there. But there's a lot of resources on the website, and there's a lot of different toolkits. So I encourage everybody to look at all the resources, lots of different toolkits for like the Boolean Test, cardiac initiative, things of that nature. So I encourage everybody to get on there and just, you know, probe what's available to them, whether you're an IFC member or not. That's on the general website. But yeah, if you just go and you just do a general search for the toolkit, that'll take you there. That'll take you to the landing page for the initiative that was created. That gives a lot of other resources. And there's also a link to the iChiefs podcast that we did early on with Chief Ludwig, kind of laying it out in the beginning. So if you're listening to this, you can listen to that one as well and see kind of how we've progressed from last year around this time, whenever we filmed that to now.
Now that's great information for Rubber Meets the Road, for our audience, that actionable. They can take that and put it into practice immediately in their departments. You know, I want to touch a little bit too. So you mentioned this was kind of a multifaceted approach, and obviously that initiative focused and it focuses on early recognition of symptoms and not ignoring them. And we know, you know, for those that have an EMS background or a medical background, paramedics that are listening, you know, we know time is muscle. So the quicker we get reperfusion to those coronary arteries and that heart muscle, the less damage there is. The other half of this, you know, and I'm reminded of this all the time. We have a whole chapter in our fire engineering book, Surviving the Fire Service, by Drs. Denise Smith and Dr. Stephanos Kales from up at Harvard, that when you look at our brother and sister firefighters that tragically passed from a cardiac event, sudden cardiac death, 80% of them, so 8 out of every 10, had a combination of underlying cardiovascular disease and an enlargement of that left ventricle, cardiac myopathy, if you will. So touch a little bit. I know we see it at LifeScan. We're almost LifeScan Wellness Centers. I think we're on track this year to see 50,000 first responders throughout the country. But the importance of identifying these risk factors early, right? Because, you know, certainly if we have a cardiac event, we need to recognize it quickly and access the care that is needed, whether that be reperfusion with pharmacological intervention or stents or however best fits. But talk a little bit, Chief, about the importance of an annual firefighter physical that is tailored and looking at the risk that we as firefighters face, which is different, right, than yeah, other professions. So touch on that, if you would, a little bit, and share your insights.
Yeah, it is different. We're similar to a lot of professions in a lot of ways, but there are some things that we share with just a few professions: military, police, corrections, things of that nature, dispatch, where the duress and the stress of our job, they happen acutely, and we get these little punches of cortisol. We have a lot of physiological things that occur to us on a regular basis that the general public doesn't have to deal with outside of extreme duress, which happens very rarely for most people in the general public, thankfully. But ultimately, being aware of your baseline is the biggest thing that I really try to drive home, is that if we can get these comprehensive annual physicals into our fire departments early, you know, the fire service has seen a big turnover in terms of age, and we have a lot of young members. And this is a great opportunity to catch them early on. We're being exposed to different types of smokes. In terms of the fuel sources, we're being exposed to a lot of different stressors that we haven't in the past. Thus, you know, as we transition and our members retire and we get these younger members into our fire service, we need to make sure that we're creating that baseline for them early on, because they're going to be able to compare and contrast that throughout their entire career. And, you know, talking about early detection could be you go in for a calcium scoring, you know, of your heart, and they pick up things that are imminent. You know, they're going to occur right now, but early detection is also making sure that we're having that baseline created, and they're able to pick up on blood level changes. They're able to pick up on different scan changes and whatnot. And those are years in advance rather than it already getting it progressing to a point where, you know, you're going to have a widowmaker blockage 2 weeks from now, presumably, and we need to get you in immediately because you're going to have an issue. So we can do early detection for a lot of different things, and we can stay on top of weight, which again can be correlated back into cardiac health, weight, and stroke potential, things of that nature. So there's a lot of things that we can identify early on. I know that there's a big drive in a lot of the annual physicals for mental health awareness and having an opportunity to sit with a clinician and have a very stress-free, safe conversation with somebody on an annual basis to where we can pick up on some of those early, you know, detection for mental disease and mental health issues that otherwise it's going to take the member themselves going to the hospital or going to a clinician. And let's face it, we don't do a good job of that a lot of times. So if we have that facilitated on an annual basis, I think that there's a much higher likelihood that people are going to take advantage of those services.
Yeah, absolutely, Chief. And you know, you pointed out about the changing of the guard, if you will, in the fire service as younger folks come up and folks like myself retire. You know, the thing that struck me when I looked at some of the findings at LifeScan that we see, and I think it was Dr. Yang published a study looking at the firefighter NIOSH fatality findings from cardiac death. And what struck me in that was the age yeah. of the sudden cardiac deaths. So they were 45 years or less.
Yeah. So
think about when you look in general population, when you think first heart attack, you're, you know, typically thinking 65, I think 66 was maybe the last number I saw in the literature. But when we're talking about firefighters, and you're right, that risk, you know, we're performing at these environments that are different and at levels of intensity on the human body that are different. And I just want to tell a brief story, and I know she won't mind me saying this because she's actually shared this story publicly. It was published EMS World Magazine did a very nice article on LifeScan Wellness Centers, and past president of the IFC as well, Rhoda May Kerr, who's in full Autodale now. She went in for her LifeScan Wellness Center physical not too long ago, and we found on her stress testing she was in atrial fibrillation, and she really didn't feel well, but couldn't really put her finger on why she wasn't feeling well, maybe tired. And you know, when you look at the literature, there's just been a study published of higher rates of atrial fibrillation in firefighters. We're not really sure why and what's causing it, but you know, I think the message, whether it's the toolkit or whether it's early detection, is the sooner we find these risks and then we intervene, you know, the goal, as Donnie alluded to when we started the podcast, of getting us all safely through our career, in our service to our communities, so we can enjoy a long and healthy retirement. So I think it all does go together. The pieces that we've been talking about. And I want to thank you and you know, Chief Ludwig and all members of the task force for what you've created. I also want to touch and just make a comment because it's evolving. And Ian, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but you know, we had a call just recently with the IFC COVID task force. And I know we're going to be doing a little webinar with, I think it's Darley, WS Darley Company and LifeScan co-hosting it, on the long-term health implications of COVID infection to first responders. But I know Dr. Denise Smith is very, very concerned, as am I, about some of the cardiovascular changes, the enhanced clotting effects of of COVID infection. And obviously, there's a ton of reports out there, whether it's behavioral health, recent study came out, behavioral health changes. But, you know, do you think with many first responders having been infected with COVID, that even increases the urgency more so of having that very meticulous baseline exam, physical, so we know where we're at today, and God forbid 2 years, 3 years from now, we find out more about long-term impacts of COVID, that at least you've got that baseline. Is that something you think is important?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think that ties back into that whole idea that if, you know, obviously there's going to be new members that come into the service that had COVID prior to being into the fire service. There's going to be members that are currently in the fire service that have had COVID that their department doesn't do an annual physical and they don't have a great relationship with their PCP. So they don't have an ongoing. So all of those things are true. But for all of those members who do have annual physicals, whether that's with their PCP or through their department, that baseline's already been created. So we're going to have a really good clearinghouse for each individual on what they look like, you know, blood work wise, scan wise, titer volume wise, or tidal volume wise, like all of those things that could be negative in terms of consequences from having COVID. We're going to have a pretty good baseline prior to the COVID infection and then post COVID infection. And I think that we're going to be able, you know, obviously it's still relatively young and we're, you know, what, a year, 14 months or so from the first time we really saw the introduction and it started to ramp up in the US. And so we're still in the infancy phase, but I think as we go through 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to have a pretty good clearinghouse of what to expect for anybody who has had COVID in the past. And then the unfortunate reality is COVID is still here and people are still being infected by COVID. So, I mean, ultimately, and if somebody is unfortunate enough to contract it from here on out, they're going to have a pretty good understanding of what other people in the past have had to deal with. And I think that it's going to take a while for it to truly rear its head with the fire service and the police service as well, law enforcement and military and whatnot, because again, you know, we're going to have the general lay public and all of the consequences and side effects that come along with just being a regular person. But it's going to take a little while to have enough empirical data from the fire service or from law enforcement or from the military to really see the effects of increased cortisol release, increased, catecholamine release whenever the tones drop. And we have, all the things that we see issues from cardiac wise, stroke wise, just general health wise. We're going to have those are likely going to impact or be impacted by the COVID infection as well. It's going to take a little while to truly see the consequences of that. So baseline is really where we're going to be working from. And for anybody who hasn't passed, still not too late. Unfortunately, you're just not going to have the pre-COVID, baseline numbers.
Yeah, that's important, and you're right. I think we don't know what we don't know yet, and fortunately, a lot of people are talking about. A lot of smart people are talking about this. There's money that's being allocated to start researching this. But you know, I always go back to that survey that the IFC did in 2016, showing that 20% of career departments were providing no physicals. And I think the number was closer to 40% for volunteers. To Donnie's point, only 10% of any physicals had any type of behavioral component to them. So we need to be, particularly with COVID and the long-term consequences, we need to really be doing a better job with as a service. Yeah. With assuring that we have those physicals in place. And you've heard me say it, I'll say it again today. We would never think of not having a preventative maintenance program for our apparatus in place. And we certainly should look at our firefighters the same way in terms of their preventative maintenance and physicals. So we're just about winding down. I know we want to be mindful of your time. I know you're busy, but I just wanted to, I had the pleasure of joining you. I think this week I was at the Texas Fire Chiefs Conference, but I jumped on a NFPA committee meeting, and I know you've been doing some great work at NFPA. Can you just touch a little bit on some of maybe what that involves and what NFPA is looking at, and And just so our folks that are listening know what's on the radar screen out there.
Yeah, so I'm fortunate enough to sit on a couple of different technical committees, the Firefighter Proqol Committee 1001 and 2 and 3 and so on and so forth. And then the fire officers, so 1021, and then the emergency responders, occupational health, which currently we're working on draft development of 1585, which is standard on contamination control. That's been a really rewarding experience, and I am happy to say that there are so many, you know, incredibly smart individuals on that technical committee, including yourself, that really are just, you know, assisting in progressing the fire service. Again, it's everything we've talked about today, and including this with contamination control, it's all a cultural shift. And as more individuals and as more organizations start to have that cultural shift, more will follow them. So, I mean, it's like anything else. And we're just working on trying to have a comprehensive extraction reference document where we're bringing in as much existing NFPA language into 1585 that represents contamination control best practices. And we're just trying to create that standard to give organizations and members of organizations a clearinghouse to go to NFPA 1585 and figure out what they need to do to try to protect themselves as much as possible for contamination control, whether that's facility creation whenever you're building a firehouse, whether that's PBE, so it's working in conjunction with 1851 and 1852 with protective ensembles as far as what their language talks about with contamination control. I'm specifically working on the chapter that discusses emergency operations and training operations. So we're just trying to bring every bit of solid information into that chapter that talks about from the time you get dispatched to the time you arrive back to the station, how we're trying to control that contamination effort on the fire ground and on training grounds. And we're looking at the different responsibilities of each member that are participating, whether it's on the training ground or it's on the fire ground.
Well, that's great. You know, you look at the big picture, you know, we didn't really touch on it today, and not really the content of today's discussion, but, you know, we've got cancer out there as a large occupational risk to firefighters. We know cardiovascular, you know, the heat exposure, the carcinogen exposure plays a role in our circulatory and cardiovascular system. So that's great that NFPA is working to get those resources in place for departments and individuals. So I want to thank you, Ian, not only for coming on and spending a little bit of time with Donnie and myself today, but I also want to thank you for giving back to the fire service. You're heavily involved in a number of areas aimed at making the service a healthier and safer, culturally even safer profession than likely it was when I came on board and perhaps when you came on board. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. I know it's a labor of love for you and a passion. So it shows, I want to again thank you for your time today. I know our guests are going to take a ton of valuable information away from this. And on behalf of Donnie and myself, keep up the great work that you're doing, and keep your family face first in front of you, and like I know you always do, and stay safe.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. And I am blessed to have the ability to provide input and try to shape that. You know, I've been blessed with a lot of really great opportunities, and part of that is getting to know other professionals and colleagues out there like you and Donnie that helped me as a person, both professionally and personally as well. So I thank you guys for having me on here and having the opportunity to share this info.
Hey, before we go, Ian, I wanted to ask you, because I know, one, from all the professional pieces that you just talked about, but also, we know each other. Todd, I don't know if you knew this or not, but we're literally now about 1 mile apart from each other physically.
Our dog.
Yeah. So he's at his office and I'm at my home office, and I could almost throw a baseball to him at this point. But I've had Ian on the podcast. But one of the things that I think, and I talked to my son, and by the way, in your advice about, because he only had his fire one, you know, where could he get a job? So he did. He landed the volunteer or paid on call down in Germantown. So he's down.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
And so I appreciate the advice on that. And he's working, he'll be testing for the EMT, getting that certification here in, I think, about 4 weeks or so. I think
that's great news.
Fantastic.
And then he moves on to fire two school. But one of the things that I know I've talked to you in the past is that, I mean, and I say that because one, I can't wait. You know, I want to introduce him to you at some point where we'll grab coffee or lunch or something at some point, because you are that mentor. And I know you have written about mentor and mentees and the importance of that. And if you could maybe just talk a little bit about that, because I think it goes a lot into this whole culture about, you know, are we putting our health, you know, first, and are we really going to take this preventive, like the LifeScan Wellness, what they offer? Are we really taking this stuff seriously about this preventive piece? And I think that mentor-mentee relationship could definitely help in that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that that's a big deal, because at the end of the day, if we're really looking at our impact, our circle of impact and influence, you know, by really focusing on our own health and wellness and on our work-life balance and those things, one, we're helping ourselves, right? So that's only going to reverberate into our families and into our professional life. But I've understood this for a long time. Time because I was that firefighter for a really long time. I still am that person that looks up to a lot of people. So not only when you invest in yourself and you invest in your work-life balance and you invest in your own health and in your professional endeavors and your personal endeavors and whatnot, you benefit from that. But every other person that you either know is watching you because you have a mentor-mentee relationship already, or people watching you from afar, you're providing them a really solid benchmark or, person to emulate. So ultimately, you know, you're gaining from that. And then there's an unknown number of individuals that are also gaining from the habits and the prioritization and the efforts that you put into your own life and into your own health. So I think developing that mentor-mentee relationship is extremely important, but also understanding that there's people watching you all the time, especially as you start to promote, or if you get involved in other ways as a firefighter paramedic and you're extremely involved, there's other people that are always going to be watching you and they're looking to emulate you because ultimately, you know, you're doing the right things. Your effort is showing that you're doing the right things. So I think people need to realize that, you know, you're making impacts far reaching from what you actually realize on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. Great, great, great stuff. Todd, you have any, you want to close it out or do you have a few more things?
No, I think I just, again, I want to thank Ian for your wisdom, your insight, your service, and want to hope all of our listeners take some great pearls away from this, just some tremendous resources and how to access them. So again, thanks for your time today, Donnie. Thanks for co-hosting as usual. And we'll look forward to the next episode.
All right, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.